I'm Katie Rich, and you're listening to Improv Nerd with Jimmy Corain.
Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Jimmy Corain's an improv nerd. Jimmy Corain's a nerd.
Hey everybody, this is Jimmy Corain, and you're listening to another episode of Improv Nerd. And for just a minute, I'd like to talk to you about my book, Improv Therapy. Now, have you ever wanted to hide or kill yourself after doing a bad improv show? Do you judge yourself and your fellow players on stage? Do you want more joy in your improvising? Well, in Improv Therapy, I discuss these things that improvisers don't want to talk about. The things that will get in the way of you being the best improviser you can be. This book is practical, it's honest, and it's funny. And the best part, it's only $3.99. So, if you're looking for a little sound advice and a little inspiration to overcome these issues, these obstacles, so you can do improv that's even better than the improv you're already doing, you've got to pick up Improv Therapy. The best way to do it is to go to my website, jimmycorain.com. It's available in both PDF and ebook format, or it's available on Amazon. Improv Therapy, we all need it. Just go to my website, my slick new website, jimmycorain.com. And if you're in Chicago and you want to stay at our favorite boutique hotel, Hotel Lincoln, now is your chance. Hotel Lincoln is offering an 18% Improv Nerd discount. If you're registering online, use the word Improv Nerd as the discount code. And if you're calling to make a reservation, just mention Improv Nerd. Hotel Lincoln, it's not only pet friendly, it's improviser friendly as well. Here we go. We got another great episode of Improv Nerd, but let's keep that between us. Our guest today is Katie Rich. She's a writer for Saturday Night Live's Weekend Update. She's also an alumni of the Second City Main Stage and I.O. Chicago, where she was a member of the all-star Herald team, Carl and the Passions, where I actually got to play with her. We talked to Katie about her first day on the job at Saturday Night Live, what it takes to write for Weekend Update, and her meeting President Obama at the White House Correspondent Dinner. This episode was recorded at Stage 773 for the Chicago Women's Funny Festival. You are going to love this episode. Katie has some just hilarious stories. Also great experience to share with you. But I've always enjoyed improvising with her. Before we get to the episode, I want you to listen to a specific part of the interview. It's about the part where I ask Katie about the media's keep asking this question about are women funny? And I want you to listen to it so you know what not to do when you're interviewing somebody. I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. It's hard for me to admit that, but it's true. And in this case, I made a mistake. And the mistake wasn't asking the question, as you will see. The mistake was the follow-up. Katie gave me her answer, and you're gonna say, Jimmy, she gave you the answer. Just let it go. Move on. But for whatever reason, I couldn't do that. And I kept digging myself in a deeper and deeper hole, and you're going to hear me get really super defensive. You're going to hopefully experience me in a shame spiral. You're going to see me or hear me get really, really uncomfortable. And maybe it makes good radio. I don't know. I have so much shame over this. I couldn't hear that portion. After we recorded it. So I haven't heard it. I just know what was going on in my head. And what was going on in my head is, oh my God, I really fucked up. And I should have known better. I've been interviewing people for 10, 12 years. What's the matter here? And then I go into this very deep, dark place. In this deep, dark place, you don't want to be there alone. You don't even want to be there with me. And that place is, not only is my career over, my life is over. That's how serious I take myself. And I don't get any relief from this. Days, it just plays on and on in my head until I finally get into group therapy and I have the courage to share it the last couple minutes of, before we go. And I tell the story and how awful I feel and embarrassed. And my group therapist looks at another guy and he says to him, who's a plumber, he says, you know, Jack, you ever make a mistake at work? And he says, yeah, I once put two pipes together. And when I heard that, I was like, my God, I am not the only one who makes mistakes at work. Guess what, people? I'm not perfect. You are going to enjoy this episode regardless of me. Katie Rich is so funny and so talented and has so much to share. All I can say is enjoy. Jimmy.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd, oh yeah. Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
All right, so we interviewed you about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And back then you were on the main stage in Second City. And then a year later, you were picked up to become a writer for Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I don't know. Well, I had auditioned for them a few times, so they knew who I was, and then...
They flew you out, you did the whole...
Yeah, and then they needed someone on Weekend Update. The head writer for Weekend Update was going to be the head writer of Seth Meyers' show, and so there was a space open, and they asked me to submit something, and that's that. So I write mostly for Weekend Update.
Okay, and, but did you... How did Cecily Strong help you at all with getting the job?
I mean, she vouched that I was a cool person and recommended me.
Uh-huh.
But I think if I was insane and couldn't write anything, she couldn't do anything about that.
And did you guys know each other back here in Chicago?
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. I've known Cecily for so long. We worked in the box office together at I.O., and we would have so much fun. And then she, when she was touring at Second City, she was my understudy. She would go in for me on main stage, and I remember I was on vacation, and she was in for me and had to get an understudy for herself because she was getting hired at Saturday Night Live. So it was very bizarre.
And then a couple years later, you joined
her. Now I'm with her, yeah.
Yeah. And then tell us about that first week on the job on Saturday Night Live.
Well, the first day, so I get to New York, and you live in a hotel basically for 3 weeks, and which sounds kind of cool. It sounds like, it's like World Tenenbaums, but it's awful. Like, all you want to do is, like, make oatmeal, and you can't. And I tried to make it in the coffee pot, which I broke. Like, so you're already in this new place, and you're living in this hotel that I was calling the Pain Cave. And it was actually a nice hotel across the street from Rockefeller Plaza, but it's New York, so it's, you know, it's this big, and that's a nice hotel. So I was only there for, like, a day. And I ordered, like, $50 worth of delivery and just, like, ate it in my room. And then the next day, I remember, like, taking a shower, and they told me, like, you can get there between, like, 10:30 and 11:30 or whatever. So I'm like, I'm getting there at 10. And so I'm, like, I'm getting ready, and I was like, you could not go. Like, you could not. Like, if you're afraid, you could just not go. And if you don't show up, then you can go back, and that's that.
So you were really, like, going, maybe I'm not going to show up for this job.
Well, you're nervous.
Yeah,
I'm just being honest. I think anytime there's something new that you're going to do, you're like, I could just not go. And I could move to Tucson and no one would know. So I
totally relate to this.
Yeah. So I had that feeling, and then I was like, you fucking idiot, go. And so I got there, and, like, no one was even there yet. Like, no one comes in until, like, noon. And that's super early. Like, then the sketch writers don't come in until, like, 6. So Johnny Jerkoff here is there, like, let's do this! And, like,
Are you, like, sitting in a waiting room or something?
No, I was in the office. I was in the Weekend Update office, and then our producer for Weekend Update, this man, Scott Weinstein, who is amazing, and who I often text accidentally when I'm trying to text Scott Goldstein, because they're my Jewish Scott friends. And the poor guy just had to, like, sit there and babysit his, like, autistic little sister, who just wouldn't stop asking questions. And then it was great. And then we have every Monday there's a topical meeting around like 5 or 6. And Seth Meyers was still the head writer. And so they're talking. And then he was like, oh, we have a new writer. And I literally was like, that's cool. And then he was like, it's Katie. And I was like, oh, my God, that's great. And I had way too much coffee, so I thought I was going to pass out. I was so nervous.
So you have that meeting on Monday, 5
yeah.
or 6. And then... And you're writing primarily Weekend Update jokes, right?
Uh-huh.
So then what's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday like?
Well, what we do is our schedule is sort of the inverse of the sketch writing schedule in that our week gets busier as the week goes on. So we write every day for about, like, 10 hours. And then Friday, you've heard of, like, the Tuesday nights where everyone at SNL stays up all night. That's our Friday. Because by then, you know what is going to be a story. Know what Fallon's already played Flip Cup about, like, you know what is still relevant. And so on Fridays we're there all night working on the features, which is what we call, like, the character pieces, like Drunk Uncle and stuff like that. segment is going to be. So it's essentially like producing a 20-minute show within a show every week.
And do you remember like the first time you got a joke on?
Yeah, I remember my first joke. It was my first week, and it was something about a guy had ordered a computer off eBay, and what he got was a picture of the computer, and he was mad when we tried to like review it or something, but his laptop was where he was like, I mean, great.
But when it went on, I mean, how did you feel about that?
I like dumped my dives. Like, it was amazing. Like, and I also remember there was one, because you write, like, we each write almost like 200 jokes a week, and then that gets pared down. We would joke read on Friday, which then gets pared down to like 150 jokes, which then gets pared down to like 30, which then gets pared down to like 12. And so you're not precious about what you write, because it's probably not going to make it anywhere. But I had another joke that made it to dress rehearsal that, and I don't want to throw Seth Meyers under the bus because he's a beautiful human, but the joke was that two lesbians were in court and they were fighting over, they were getting a divorce and they were fighting over custody of their wiener dog. And so the joke was like, and the dog said like, yes, two Christmases. And I remember like loving that joke because he was so cute and so funny. But Seth can't say dachshund. And so he like flubbed it. And then we were like, well, we'll just cut it because he can't say it. And I was like, what? But like, that's what's our, I mean, there's a real arbitrary lovely order to it where it's like, oh, he has trouble pronouncing that word, why would we do that joke? We have a million other ones that he can do that are, he'll feel more comfortable.
Is there a pressure? Because I know, like, for people that write on that show, there's a pressure. Oh, gotta get my, when they're writing sketches, I gotta get my sketch on. Because if I don't get my sketch on, when my contract comes up at the end of the year, they're not gonna have me back.
Yeah.
Is there a little pressure to that?
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of our own little nerd herd entity. So, like, our segment will not get cut. Knock on everything. So that's something. And it depends on how you want to look at it. Like, I think being from the background that I'm from, I know that the segment itself has to be the best. So if that means using a lot of my jokes, that's great. If that means not using a lot of my jokes, that's great. Because if the segment is good, then we all look good. It's very much an ensemble.
And do you go off in a room and write, or do you collaborate with people?
We do both. Like, there's a lot of, we get setups every day, and then, you know, we write jokes every day by ourselves, and then we also collaborate, and then towards the end of the week, that's when we're collaborating more. And then on Saturdays, everyone collaborates to punch up, like, the monologue and other sketches. So there's, so we're also contributing to that, too, but that's not really until, like, Saturday. Although sometimes when they're doing a cold open, they will ask us to help.
Give me an example of a cold open.
The cold open is just, you know, when the show starts and it's like a message from Barack Obama. The cold open is just the first sketch. And it's called a cold open because no one says this is Saturday Night Live. Yeah.
So you guys are like your own little cocoon. Like, it's a show inside a show.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
And how many writers write for Weekend Update?
Including myself. There's four of us, yeah. And then we have Scott, our producer, and then we also have another producer, Dennis McNicholas, who used to be the head writer. He was Tina Fey's co-head writer. And so he is also like he's sort of the liaison between Lorne et al.
Do you have any, what is your relationship with Lorne? He scares me a little bit.
Yeah, he should. I mean, he's a very important person. You keep your head down and you do your work, and when you see him, you treat him like a human being, and that's all.
And did you get a little nervous around him?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really get nervous around people that much, but there are times when I pass him in the hall and I don't think I'm going to see him that I feel like my underarms tingle. Like, that response is though, like, oh, there's Tiger. And, but no, I mean, the thing is, he knows what he's doing, you know, so there's no point in trying to argue with him. He's done it for 40 plus years. He knows what he's doing.
You also have such a reputation here in Chicago of saying so many provocative things on stage.
Really?
Yeah. I've always loved working with you because you're so, you can say some kind of raunchy stuff. And
yeah.
Would you agree to that?
Yeah. I don't think it's like, I don't, I guess. I've never like set out to do that. I don't shy away from anything.
Right.
I don't like intend to like, I'm not like, hey guys, don't forget, I'm doing my N-word sketch where I say the word with my pussy. You know what I mean? Like, it's not gonna. I guess that's a dirty thing to say, but.
How have you been able to, like, have you had to adjust for TV? Like, have you?
Yeah, you do. You do. You have to, writing for TV, especially for network television, especially for the audience that we write for, which is the broadest of all audiences you could possibly think of, and the sponsors that advertise with us, and this and then the other, and the people that are friends with NBC, and, you know, there's so much going into it, but at the end of the day, a good joke is a good joke, and I think you become a better writer when you can't swear, and you can't say, you can't rely on blue humor necessarily to get your point across. So it's made me a much cleaner writer, those constrictions.
And you recently had an opportunity. You and Cecily Strong went to the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Yeah, it was, and it was also, it was the Weekend Update team, and then these two other writers, Chris Kelly and Sarah Schneider, who, if you liked something that you saw, they wrote it, I'm sure, on SNL, they're so fucking good. And we all worked for a month working on this thing, and then we went to D.C., and it was insane, and D.C. was so fun, and we got to meet Barry O. and Michelle, and it was the best.
Barry O.
Barry O, because I've met him, so I call him Barry O instead of President Barack.
What was your interaction with him?
Well, I can't wait to tell you this because it was truly one of the best days of my life.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm not kidding. There was a reception before the actual dinner, and so everyone got to take a picture. There's like 100 of us, and everyone got to take a picture with Michelle and Barack. And so we're like waiting in this line that's like not really moving. And it's myself and the head writer of Update, who's Pete Schultz. And I'm just so excited because he's, like, they're everything to me, you know. And so then I get up there and he, like, shakes my hand. And Chris and Sarah had gone before us. His hands are like pillows. They're beautiful. And they just felt so good. And he goes, the other writers that I talked to, they said that if anything bombs, you wrote it. And I was like, and again, I guess this goes to me not like really getting into it. I go, you're being very rude. I go, that's like, that's a very rude thing to say to someone who you just met. And he laughed, you know, he thought it was funny. And I was like, and we know his speechwriter, so I was like, I know you're going to do great. You're so good. And then just like a complete asshole, like I blurted out, I was like, I'm from 80th and Pulaski! and he was like, oh, okay, I knew I liked you. And he goes, Michelle, she's from 80th and Pulaski. And Michelle goes, oh, she's our homegirl. And then I just burst into glitter and passed out. And I just was like, oh, my God, it was amazing. They're so nice and wonderful. And then, like, as we were leaving, I, like, took Michelle's hand. And I was like, I just want to let you know, like, we love you. Meaning Saturday Night Live, but mostly me. And she was like, we love you guys, too. Like, it was just a wonderful interaction, and I've decided I'm going to vote for him for the next, like, 3 presidential elections.
You're just going to write in his name?
I'm just going to write him in. I'm going to write Barry O. And we got to meet his dogs. We got to meet Bo and Sonny.
Why are you so excited about that?
Because they're the first dogs.
Okay.
I don't know what to tell you. We were doing a White House tour, and so they have us, like, all in a room, like, before we start the actual tour, and they're just kind of briefing us about what, you know, you can take pictures, you can do this, Bo. And they're like, plus we have a special treat for you. And the door opens, and Bo and Sonny come out. There are two dogs. You're all dicks for not knowing that. You only know Bo. There's Sonny. She's a female, and she's beautiful, and she's great, and you're rude for not knowing that. And so they bust in, and Cecily and I just pass away for like 5 minutes. Like, we can't believe it. And there's just all these pictures of us just like hugging these first dogs. It was the best. And then they're like, now would you like to see the White House? And I was like, no. I met the dogs.
Well, you know, I listened to his Obama when he was at the White House correspondence dinner.
Okay. I was like, be more specific. Wasn't he good?
What makes him, like, I thought this guy, after it, I'm like, if he wants to, he can pursue comedy as a career.
Yeah,
what makes him so good?
Well, it's not shocking. I mean, Ronald Reagan was an actor. Like, it's not shocking. You have to be good, but he's very funny. There's just something about him that he's funny. He has good timing. And, I mean, you all saw it when at that State of the Union address when he just bitch slapped, when, you know, when he was like, you're burnt. Like, he literally burned someone. He improvised. He's just good. He's so funny, and he's willing to make fun of himself. And he has a good, you can tell he has a good sense of humor. I know I sound like, I'm not going to say anything bad about him.
Okay. You've been on the show, you're hired as a writer. Is there a part of you that goes, and you performed at Second City for a long time, in Ohio, is there a part of you that would like to be on the show as a performer?
I think there's a part of all of us that would like to see the other aspect of everything. And if that's what you focus on, you're going to have a really bad life.
So how do you let that part go?
Like when you don't let it go, you do your job and you're thankful for what you have. And I perform all the time. I just don't necessarily perform on SNL. So if I was there the whole time, like, oh, I wish I was doing sketches, I would have been fired. Like, that's, you're not helping anyone. So it's just a matter of, I don't know. I would have a different life.
You were also there during the 40th anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What was that like to be part of?
Well, we didn't directly write for it necessarily. There was just a few. Like, it was mostly like Tina and Seth, and you know. But it was pretty insane. And being at that party where everyone's like dressed up, and you're like, I have to go to the bathroom. There's Beyonce. And that's truly what it was. It was like everyone you could ever think of was in this room. And I always say this, like, what was that like? And I say, I knew I wasn't dead because my family and, like, my dog weren't there. But I had to keep being like, am I dead? Are we all dead? And, like, this is just, because it's like the dream that you have where everyone's in these beautiful gowns and you're like, oh, hello, Paris Hilton. You know what I mean? But it was real and it was pretty awesome. But the person I went most insane for was Peyton Manning.
What is it about Peyton Manning then?
I don't know how he does what he does. I know how celebrities, I know how people in show business do what they do. That's not a mystery to me. The fact that that man, athletes to me are like, oh my God, I'm way more excited to meet them.
Did you go up to him?
Well, I went up to Eli first.
That was good. Work your way up the ladder.
I worked my way up. And, so I went up to Eli, and I go, hi, you know, hello. I was like, I write, I'm one of the writers on the show. And he goes, oh, yeah, I remember you. And I was like, you don't, but we've never met, but that's how polite they are. Like, because he did host the show, so we took a picture. And then I kept wanting to talk to him. This is an absurd sentence that is true that I never thought I would say. And it was, it's this. I kept trying to talk to Peyton Manning, but I couldn't because he was talking to Bon Jovi. And that's when you're like, am I dead? I'm dead. This isn't real. But then finally, Bon Jovi left, and I went over to him, and Tim Meadows also went over to him. And Tim Meadows is a friend of mine. I know him. And I went over there, and I wasn't drinking or anything, but I just was like, no! Like, when he got there, I was like, I need to talk to him. And Tim goes, do you know each other? Tim was so beautiful. He was like, oh, God, do you know each other? And then I was like, first of all, very cool for thinking that. And then Peyton Manning goes, yeah, we went to high school together.
Now, what are you thinking at this point?
Just dump it in my dimes. Like, I couldn't believe it. Like, and Tim was like, oh, okay. Okay, like, why would you know? So then we, like, talked for a bit. So I have a picture of myself, Peyton Manning, and Tim Meadows, which is, like, another insane thing. But, yeah, he immediately was like, we went to high school together.
Now, when we had you on the show 3 years ago, you talked about having anxiety. How has this job helped you with your anxiety, or how are you managing your anxiety? Because this is a huge opportunity, would you say?
Yeah, it is. But the only way to look at it as like I have a job and I do that job every day. It's just a one day at a time thing. When you start to spiral and think about the repercussions of it, then you're not doing anything. You're just paralyzed. So I'm lucky to have a really great team that I work with. So I never feel alone. It's similar to like Second City or IO. I think if I was doing this alone, it would be a lot different.
How does the comparison of putting up a main stage show versus working at SNL, how would you compare those?
Well, I kind of talked to you a little bit about this. It's the same in the sense that you get one day off a week, and all you do is like order delivery and lay in your bed because you're so tired. But the schedule itself, I think, is harder when you're writing the main stage show than it is.
In what way?
Because when you're writing a main stage show, you're there all day writing, and then you don't go home. You perform what you wrote, and then you get notes on it, and then you have to write again, and then come back and do the same thing. So it would be like if you wrote a show, if SNL was every day, almost. And there's a big difference between, like, not only are you writing this, but you also have to memorize it so you can perform it. When the show is open at Second City, it's way easier than SNL. But when you're actually creating it, I find that that schedule is probably the hardest schedule I'll ever have, including if I have a child, which I probably won't.
Why won't you have a child?
Oh, that's something I say.
But you really don't believe it?
I don't know.
Okay.
I assume it doesn't work.
What doesn't work? The whole...
Yeah, I mean, I've just been so irresponsible. I feel like if I don't have one by now, there's something wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm trying to. So you've had a lot of sexual sex. I feel shame asking that, and you feel it got screwed up in some way. Is that?
No. I mean, I didn't like. I wasn't like fucking screwdrivers, or you know what I mean? Like, I didn't like injure myself.
Because you could still get pregnant if you've been fucking screwdrivers, according to what I've read.
Okay, you a stone cold freak, and no, I just mean like I don't mean the amount. I just mean the irresponsible way in which I used to be. I think I would assume something would happen by now.
Should we move on to another subject? Is this
making
you uncomfortable?
It's not making me uncomfortable. I just don't think we're very on task.
Well, I'm just afraid. I'm afraid to go there. You know.
You are?
Yes. Why do you think that I'm like not afraid to go places?
No, not at all.
Are you serious? I'm terrified. Terrified.
You always like say the one thing. Like you always like go for stuff during this.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you feel protective because of that?
No.
Okay.
Because if I don't want to talk about it, I don't want to talk about it.
Right. Okay. So I guess we're not going to talk about the thing we were just talking
about.
We
can, but who wants to know? It's boring. It's stupid. Who wants to have like a 30-something woman and be like, I don't know if I'm having kids. Like, just go to Starbucks.
I want to ask you this because I'm really interested in your opinion. 2015 seems like it's just this breakout year for Amy Schumer, Tina, certainly, Melissa McCarthy, Amy Poehler, Bronson. With this explosion, we hear this the media brings up, are women funny and all this stuff. Do you think with the current explosion of women, because Melissa McCarthy, no one's bigger than her right now, or Amy Schumer.
Well, maybe watch how you phrase it.
Okay. In terms of box office, is this going to put to rest this thing about our women funny?
Well, you just asked me the question, so I don't think so.
Okay.
You're still asking.
I'm still asking it, but I'm asking it from the, like, why are we still talking about it?
I didn't bring it up.
In the media, they seem to keep recycling this, are women funny, are women funny? Which, to me, it's like, that I don't. Why do they keep bringing it up?
I think you should ask yourself that.
Okay. Why do I bring
Why are you bringing this up?
I don't.
Because you feel like you have to, because I'm a woman and this is the thing you should ask me?
No. I, first of all, I've known you and I'm like, okay, we can talk about it. But for me, when I keep hearing that, I keep reading it, it makes me, I guess I'm not being honest, it makes me incensed, you know, because it's like.
It makes you incensed enough to still ask a question you think is stupid.
Well, I guess I just want, like, the perception.
And I'm not being, like, I'm being.
No, I know.
This is fascinating because, honestly, this is, I think, the fifth interview I've done with this festival, and this is the fifth time I've been asked this question.
Are we coming from a different angle?
No.
Okay.
I don't know. I've said this is what I've said before. Like, do you think black people could be lawyers?
Yes.
Okay.
But my question.
But you think some of them probably are bad at it? Yeah. Does it have anything to do with them being black?
No.
Okay.
No.
There's a lot of funny people. There's a lot of people that aren't funny. And there happens to be more men in comedy than women. So, if anything, numbers-wise, there's more unfunny men than there are unfunny women. But I just don't really think it's a. I just don't think it's an interesting conversation because I don't think anyone has looked at you and been like, "Do you think someone like you can be funny?"
But let me tell you this: where I come from, I've always loved working with women. You know, like I, you know, and I started an improv where at the IO, if you had one woman on your team, it was like a big deal.
For sure.
And so I've seen this. I've seen it since I've started. Totally, like, you know, the Tina Fey's, the Amy Poehler's, all this through. And it just boggles my mind that, you know, and I know certainly I'm bringing this up, but I'm like, when are we going to be able to put this to rest?
I think by putting it to rest, I just don't bring it up anymore. I'm not being kind of, like,
right.
That's it. Like, it's just one of those things, like, don't, let's not talk about it anymore.
Okay.
Because I just don't think it's interesting. Is there anything that you don't, is there anything that needs to be answered about that? I mean, I could go into evolution and say that evolutionary-wise, women didn't have to be funny to attract a mate.
I want to answer this, and I don't know why I'm letting it go. Like, in comedy, I get it. But it seems to me like the media outside of it wants to keep it going.
The media outside of it wants to keep a lot of things not going for women, and it's not just comedy. So,
what are the other things?
Everything. Except being, like, a mother or a teacher, basically.
Okay. All right. So we're going to improvise now.
Okay. Okay.
I've never veered off that, like, in doing this for almost 4 years, never veered off into politics like that.
Well, great.
Yeah.
It's good. You should.
It scares me a little. Okay. So what do you want? What would you like to do? We'll probably do about 10 minutes of improv. What would you like to do?
Well, I have written the 10 minutes what I want to do.
Okay.
No, we can just do scenes.
Okay. You want to do scenes and we'll just edit them?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay.
Could we also, like, play, like, Do Run Run or something? Like, we can play short form games.
We can play short form games. We can play Bippity Bippity Boo or whatever that is. We can play it.
I'd rather just do scenes.
Okay, great. So we're going to take a suggestion. How would you like to start?
Yeah, just get a suggestion.
We have a suggestion, please. Pickles. Now, when you hear pickles, how does you know we're going to do a series of scenes? How does your mind work?
I think of a beagle, a dog.
Okay, so then.
Because I have a friend who has a dog named Pickles, who's a big fat beagle.
Great. So how are you going to use that in the scene? How will you start with that?
Well, now I'm going to get another suggestion because I would have just started. So we shouldn't talk about it. We should just do it.
Okay, I get it.
You know what I mean?
Yes, but also people like to hear the.
I probably would have, like, been like, you have a very cute dog.
Okay, so you go to Beagle's dog and then cute dog.
So, oh, yeah. Okay, so, I see what you're saying.
Great, so we'll start with a new suggestion.
Yes.
If you want to, but that's how your mind works.
Yeah.
It usually goes to the object. Is that right?
it just goes to the first thing that that makes me think of. Okay. That's the first thing it makes me think of is my friend's dog.
Okay, great. We need a new suggestion. Hazy and anxiety. Okay. You've heard two suggestions. How do you pick one?
We just do what that means.
Okay, great.
All right, let's just
pictures of your husband on your desk or anything.
Oh, well, I have a very, like, have you read that book about the magic of throwing stuff away?
Yeah, I love that book.
Yeah. So I just kind of have a very, like, clear desk.
Okay. Because Colleen said that, like, you know, things were going.
Colleen's fucking retarded.
We can't say that.
Oh, my God!
Keeping us waiting!
Okay.
That's you on my screensaver.
Oh. Man, I shouldn't have dressed as Khaleesi for Halloween.
I voted for you. So you won the best costume award.
Well, thank you.
You touched me again.
Yeah.
No, it's not going to pop up. That's like in a secret area.
Oh.
I put, you know, I
goes to shit, it goes to shit.
Yeah.
We'll still have our jobs.
Yeah.
Right?
You're not attracted to me at all, are you?
Literally, I'm married.
And, I get it, I get it. But if you weren't married?
I don't know what that would be like. I, like, cannot answer that question. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You just go in it yourself. Just go in yourself. I'm not going
to
go.
I don't know how to work that.
Just all you have to do is hit the reset button. That's all you have to do. I'm not going in.
I'm obviously attracted to you in certain ways.
Really?
Or I wouldn't.
What way?
Well, I wouldn't work with you if I wasn't.
Yeah, but just say one thing. Like, I can say, like, five things about you.
Okay, well, I
you got great hair. You got great eyes.
Okay.
You got a great laugh.
Again.
You got a great smile.
Okay.
You got a great body.
I see why you don't smoke pot.
I don't smoke pot because I heard you didn't smoke pot.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I can't even think of one.
No,
plan.
That's not what
I got a whole list on my computer and I can wrap it up.
I just pictured you foaming at the mouth. I can't stop. I'm so sorry. Ask me tomorrow.
Ask you tomorrow?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Oh. I'm just not in the right mind, Seth. I'm so sorry. I'm laughing because I'm stoned.
Because I'm an idiot.
No,
I'm a stupid idiot.
I'm stoned. That's why I'm laughing.
I can't go in there because all I can think about is you rejecting me.
If we get this.
I'm not going to be here tomorrow.
Are you going to kill yourself?
Yes.
Are you serious?
I'm serious, yeah.
Oh. Wait, what?
Yeah, I'm gonna kill myself.
Or is this like another thing you're just saying again?
No, I'm serious about it. I made a pact with myself that if you rejected me, I was gonna quit today and I was gonna go home and kill myself.
Do you think that maybe there's other things going on, if that's all it would take?
So popular and everything, but you know what? You do hurt people. You're taking all my memories.
If you don't do the presentation, I won't. And then nobody gets anything. So.
Are you kidding me? I'm gonna go home. Kill myself, and all you care about is the presentation.
No, I'm trying to handle this in a way that is appropriate in a workplace setting, and also I don't want you to hurt yourself. So why don't we just stick with what we have to do right now?
How did you feel about that?
That's great. I just, when I heard, like, hazy anxiety, I was like, well, they're doing something that they'll be nervous about, and they smoked pot before they did it, so everything's hazy. That's all. Improv simple.
I didn't know what we were doing. I'm like, okay, you're laughing or whatever. I'm just going to mirror what you're going to
do. Yeah, it's perfect.
We're going to find out where we're going. The part where it was like, and I love to go to the dark, and
mm-hmm.
playing with you, you like to go to the dark too. The suicide thing, like, oh, you're going to go home and you're going to kill yourself. And I just was like, okay, I'm going to agree to it because it also seems a mistake. What is a good way of handling that?
Handling which part of it?
He's going to go home and kill himself.
I think you just that is how I would handle it. If a coworker and I was like super high and in a very high pressure situation, I think it would just be like, you just try to handle it the way you think the character would handle it based on the circumstances. And I don't think you would ignore that. And I also like, oh my God, no! You know, so you just try to have an honest reaction.
And were you playing a wanted MC, like, I just want to go and do the presentation?
Yeah, I just wanted to go and do this presentation. And also, my backstory with Excel was like, you maybe say these things sometimes, like, for attention. And so that was how I kind of, like, resolved it in my mind. Like, you were going to pull out a gun and blow your brains out right there. Like,
right.
Things were going to go fine, and then you were going to say, like, I'm not going to kill myself.
Would you have done anything different?
If I was going to look at it, script it, probably, but no.
Okay.
No.
And when you do improv, do you go back and give yourself notes, or how do you look at the scene?
No, because that's the best thing and the worst thing about improv is that once, if it's bad, that's great, no one will ever see it again, but if it's amazing, no one will ever see it again. So, you can't really worry about it. Like, sometimes before I go to bed, you finally have to reach a point where you're like, it's done. It's gone. And that's fine.
Great. Do we have time to take a couple questions? Great. Excellent. So if we can turn the house lights on. Thanks, Sam. For Katie, a couple questions for Katie Rich about what we just did. Right back there. Yeah.
So we get the setups that we get are just essentially a headline, right? And then you come up with a punchline to a headline. So we get about 30 to 40 of those a day. So that's just a numbers thing. It's a real numbers thing. You just read it. You're like, what's the first thing that comes to my head? Okay, can I work that into something? There's three different kinds of setups. There's like a top story setup, which would be like, Obama's trade plan didn't go through. And so all you can really do there is use what people think of Obama, what they think of with trade plan. You can't explain anything. Then there's a second tier, which is like, the Pope was funny today, you know, and then you're like, oh, people know about the Pope, but I can inject my own thing into there. And then there's the man in Florida stuff, which is like, a man in Florida fucked a burrito. And like, then you can kind of do whatever you want because you're not dealing with the audience's preconceived notions of what that story is. So you kind of divide them into that, and then you go from there. Does that answer that at all? Okay. Yeah. I go whole days without coming up with a good joke. Like, that's why you do it every day.
How do you bust out of that? You just exhausted.
You go do something else.
Walk to the park,
yeah.
Go out to dinner, just
yeah.
Take
you gotta do something else.
Great. Another question for Katie, right over here.
Do you want me to tell you that because then you'll feel like you have something to follow? And that's a sincere question. For sure. Me telling you my process won't help you. It's not like med school or law school where, you know, you go from A to B to C. The only thing I can tell you is you have to keep doing stuff and you're going to fail a lot and you're going to put up a lot of bad stuff and you're going to be bad at stuff for a while and that's fine and you're going to get a little bit better and that's great and just keep doing that and surround yourself with people who support you and make you feel safe and make you laugh and who are smarter than you. Always be around people who are better than you. It's just like with running. Always run with people who are faster than you, and you'll just get faster. Yeah, for sure.
Great. Another question? Yeah, right over here.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, improvising is writing. It's just you're just not writing in front of a computer. A lot of times I will write by talking to myself like I would with improv, just because that's what I learned at Second City. That's how you create. We create on our feet. But in your own head is okay. Like, that's where you should be. That's where all the gold is, and that's wonderful, and that's where you should be. I think you're kind of talking about, like, when you're blocked. yourself a weird challenge. Like, you could be like, the next thing I write has to do with Star Trek, no matter what. And then you'll just write something random. And know that no one's going to see your first draft. You're going to write a lot of shitty first drafts. No one's going to see it. No one's going to knock on your door and be like, can I see the garbage you don't want anyone else to see? That's never going to happen. So write whatever you want and then edit. But you have to have something to be able to edit. So, yeah.
Great.
Good.
Yeah, one more question. Right here.
No, it's not. That's where the sketch writing comes in way more. But I will say this. If you can hone your actual joke writing skills, all of your comedy writing skills will just get better. Because when you only have a certain amount of time and a certain amount of context to deliver a punchline, everything gets better. And you can take a sketch, which is what that's what Drunk Uncle is. It's just a sketch. And you can be like, you don't need this, you don't need this, you don't need this, you don't need this. It has helped me so much just to become a better, more efficient writer. So, just study monologue jokes. Study good monologue jokes. It will help you so much in all your comedy writing to just get to it. Get to the funny. Get to it. We don't give a shit about the other stuff. Get to it. Yeah.
We've got to wrap this up.
Okay.
We usually end the episode with asking you one piece of advice.
Okay.
One piece of advice that you give to an improviser starting out today.
Be kind and respectful to everyone, because you don't know who's going to be with you for the rest of your life. You really don't. And everyone deserves to be treated the same way. So don't treat someone better because you think they can get you something. That's what I would say.
Katie Rich, thank you so much for being
thank
here.
You.
And there you have it. Another episode of Improv Nerd is in the can. And I want to thank our guest, Katie Rich. And I love the story about her meeting Barack Obama and what she told him. It was hilarious. And I also love the dogs, meeting the presidential dogs. So that was really cool, too. I want to thank Jill Valentine for including us in the Chicago Women's Funny Festival at Stage 773. And I want to thank Stage 773, as always. They treat us like such rock stars. It's our home base. I'd like to thank my producer, Dan Schiffmacher. He's the one who makes me sound so slick and so professional. If it wasn't for Dan, you wouldn't be hearing my voice right now. Also, Sam Bowers, who is our director for our live show here in Chicago. If you want more information about me, Jimmy Corain, and my award-winning improv classes and the Improv Nerd blog, go to my website, jimmycorain.com. That's my slick new website, jimmycorain.com. As you know, we're taking over social media. We're doing it one social media outlet at a time. First, we started with Facebook, so like us, Improv Nerd, on Facebook. It really helps with my low self-esteem. Then follow us at Improv_Nerd, and then our YouTube channel, which is Improv Nerd Podcast. You're going to love it. There's clips, wonderful clips from the actual shows. Also, we're part of a podcast collective called feralaudio.com. So check out all their innovative and hilarious and unique podcasts at feralaudio.com. And of course, I'd like to thank you for listening, because without you, what am I doing with my life? And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Hello, I'm Kyle Ayers. I'm the host of Never Seen It, the podcast where comedians rewrite famous movies and TV shows they've never seen, and then we give them a read in studio. This is a clip I want to play for you guys from an episode where Langston Kerman rewrites Scarface. He's never seen it, but he wrote a script based on what he thinks he knows about it, and here's a clip. Give it a listen.
All right, Scarface, The New Frontier. Interior, happening discotheque. Remember when we called clubs discotheques? LOL, the 70s were crazy. Night. The crowd bustles with young, hot Mexicans who are supposed to be Cuban and all are dressed in butterfly-collared shirts and pants that look like JNCO jeans and pleated khakis had a really weird baby. There's sex in the air and Poppy wants a whiff.
Oh, my God.
Scarface, 22 to 45.
Like he's a television audience demographic.
Devilishly handsome, not even a little bit Italian looking, so get that out of your dumb brain. Walks through the crowd with the confidence of a man who's going on MTV Cribs with the Ying Yang Twins one day. Does he actually have a scar on his face? Fuck no. Why would you even ask that? That's not important. What's important is that he is not at all a problematic stereotype and that he has come for his cocaine. As he approaches the red rope of the VIP, pronounced ve a pe in Spanish,
oh my God.
He spots his dear friend, who is almost certainly going to become his enemy by the end of the film, Smooth Skin. Scarface yells out his signature line.
Ciao, Bella. It's me, Scarface.
Oh, my God.